Welcome to About Sex. I'm Josh, and with me is Angela Skirtu. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist and a sex therapist in Baldwin, Missouri.
That is correct.
Hi. Hello. Hello. So today on About Sex, we are talking about sex addiction and some of the negative treatments that people have been using. Specifically, abstinence is one of the treatments people have been using, and you see that as a very bad thing for marriages.
Yeah, I don't think anybody who's married should go through an abstinence period by choice.
Okay, so ASECT recently put out a statement saying that, let me read this. ASECT does not find sufficient empirical evidence to support the classification of sex addiction or porn addiction as a mental health disorder. And it does not find sexual addiction training and treatment methods to be adequately informed. So really, they're saying it's not a mental health disorder, and the treatments really aren't researched and don't work. So you're not addicted to sex. Good news. Hooray. Now all your problems are solved.
Well, I feel like that's still an exaggeration.
Sure.
But
that's
what
I do.
What they're... You know, like if I were to put some info into that, there are people who have problematic sexual behaviors, people who act out impulsively compulsive.
They have compulsive behaviors.
Yeah, there are people who really love sex and are in relationships with people who don't love sex and sometimes use that as an excuse to act out.
Yeah.
But the reality is sex is a good thing in marriage. Yeah. And if people are consenting, you're allowed to have sex as much and as frequently as you like.
So somebody would... You don't use this treatment. You never use this treatment. But somebody, you said you've had clients who would see a different therapist before they came to you, and that therapist would suggest abstinence for somebody who has that compulsive sexual behavior, which is not a mental health disorder, apparently, according to ASECT. And what are the negative outcomes of that? Like, what does it do?
Well, so...
Abstinence.
First, I want to tell you where it comes from, and then I'll tell you the outcomes.
Okay.
So, like, because people are viewing sex addiction as an addiction, that abstinence idea comes actually from alcohol and drug addiction treatment. Like, a period of abstinence can maybe be a helpful way to reset your system.
Right.
The problem, though, is that abstinence in a marriage actually causes harm for a couple.
Yeah.
You know, even when a couple is undergoing a surgery or like pregnancy, for example, when there is a period of time where they can't have sex, I still suggest that couples should find ways to be intimate in some way, but just let it completely die.
Because a tough time. Like, we had a child, and there was 2 months, actually, where no sex.
And it's a stressor. The way you describe it is a tough time.
It was already a tough time because you have a brand new baby in the house. And then also, you're not getting laid. So, double whammy.
Sex is what helps couples feel close. It is. It's not the only thing.
And it's a stress reliever.
It is a stress reliever. And when it's not in a sexual in a marriage or in a long-term relationship, people feel higher levels of stress. And so abstinence is a very bad thing for relationships. And that's what they use as a treatment, as they say. And they're not even just doing abstinence from, like, say it's a porn addiction, right? They don't even just say only abstinence from porn, which I think there can be value in avoiding, like, a harmful behavior. If you've really acted out poorly with porn and, like, sought out prostitutes and gone, usually they'll have these lines where it starts with porn, but then it moves to bigger things and worse things that are sometimes illegal, right? That would be a compulsive behavior.
Right.
But
it's not the sex causing it.
It's not the sex.
What ASECT is saying is that, really, it's an... something else, either a mental disorder like bipolar,
like OCD.
Depression, OCD, is causing them to act out in those compulsive ways.
Yeah, sex itself is a wonderful thing. Yeah. It's something that we should be seeing as positive, not a negative. But when you filter sex into a sex addiction category, then it makes sex seem like the problem. It demonizes it.
Right. And I think a lot, like for me, like I think a lot of that has to do with it, the hidden part of sex. Because if you are raised in a household where masturbation and pornography is not allowed.
Yeah, banned.
Like the reality is you're going to see it as something you have to do in secret. And it may be have a negative effect because of that. It becomes that secret thing you do instead of just being something that's natural and healthy.
You're absolutely right. Actually, I've had clients talk to me about that too, that like because they were raised in households where sex is seen as shameful, mm-hmm. and usually it's religious households, mm-hmm. But when sex is seen that way, then it's very hard for them to come up with a new version of what sex can be if it's positive and in marriage. Even though they've done the thing they're supposed to do, waited to have sex until marriage, they still have trouble with shame around sex.
So what should somebody do if they are having these compulsive behaviors? They're seeking out things outside their marriage, cheating on their wife, doing these things, and they're kind of out of control. Sex isn't the problem. Something else is. What should they do?
They should still seek therapy, but they should be seeing somebody who has a focus in harm reduction, mm-hmm. anxiety treatment, or depression treatment.
Yeah.
Because, so like the core problem isn't sex. It's some sort of mental health disorder. And so if you think of it like depression, depression has outcomes, like choices that people make that are causing some harm. Okay. So depression. People feel down or they feel kind of restless or numb. Those are the typical feelings people experience when they're depressed.
They don't feel good.
When people feel that way, they act in ways that are not in accordance sometimes with their natural like value system.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll lash out. Sometimes they'll seek some sort of excitement or
change.
Yeah, something to change it. That, like, because it feels so terrible. They're like, well, maybe if I do this,
they
want to
quit their job, find a new spouse.
Yeah. So it's in that case, like sex addiction or what looks like sex addiction or compulsion could really be just somebody who's depressed that's seeking a way to escape that depression and using sex or porn as a means to do that in an inappropriate way. And that's the hard thing about depression is it takes away your motivation and sometimes takes away your discerning part, you know, where you're actually thinking before you act. So that can happen with depression. It can happen with extreme forms of anxiety or bipolar, and it can happen with OCD.
Yeah.
It's not sex that's the problem. It's not even porn that's the problem. And it's hard because I understand why people want to pinpoint porn. There are some misunderstandings when it comes to porn.
What? People don't understand how porn works? Well, see, what happens is people get naked and then they do sex things to each other.
I know.
And then you watch it. It's really not a misunderstanding to me.
Well, this people, what do you mean? People are using porn for sex education. Yeah. And it's just, we've talked about this in plenty of episodes. It's meant to get you off. That's its job. And it's every angle, everything about it is about how can we heighten your getting off experience. It's not about intimacy. It's not about connection. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not about education, even though there are porn sites now that are offering real sex education because they realize there's a lack somewhere.
Right.
So anyhow, yeah, it's not the porn or the sex.
Yeah. Okay. So abstinence. When is it okay to do it? Do you think it's ever a good treatment at all?
I think that you can abstain from things that are harmful sexually. Like, it is a good idea to abstain from having sex with somebody outside of your marriage.
Yeah.
You know, in an affair.
If you're in a monogamous relationship.
If you're supposed to be in a monogamous relationship, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have suggested to clients to, like, if they really are getting into a position where they're having... they're watching more porn than they are having sex with their partner. I will ask them to abstain from porn so that they learn to kind of re-experience sex in a more normal way.
Yeah.
But I don't ask them to abstain from sex.
Right.
Or masturbating, for that matter. Which in these programs, they suggest an abstinence from everything. From sex, from masturbating, from any porn usage, everything.
That's crazy. You understand that men have to have it released. We make it every day. And it will find a way
by
out.
It, he means come.
Yeah, we will ejaculate. And if you don't do it yourself, it's called nocturnal emissions, right?
Yeah, wet dreams.
It's not emissions, you're jizzing. Yeah, because your body makes it and it has to find a way to get it out.
Yeah, it will find a way. And
are there negative effects from not masturbating, from not having a sexual release?
What usually happens is people, their bodies will just do it, you know? So basically, like, priests who are supposed to be abstinent their entire lives,
I'm sure they do,
will have wet dreams.
Yeah.
And nuns will as well.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem that I'll see happening when people are doing it for any period of time is they basically create a shutdown mechanism mm-hmm. in their brain for any sexual interest or desire.
Right, because they're telling themselves that sex mm-hmm. is a bad thing.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to have sex right mm-hmm. now. So the people who are successful at it successfully shut down their desire. And it's a very bad deal.
That's yeah, but can you actually shut it down? I would think it would just make you really frustrated.
Well, like I said, it's people who are successful, yeah. right? In order to be successful, you have to learn to essentially shut down your body's natural
urges to
release and to want sex. Yeah. And so what it does then after this abstinence period is it makes them not have that urge anymore. Like they have to work at getting something that was
to
once
get their
natural.
Desire back.
Yeah.
They don't have any desire for their partner after that.
If they're successful at abstaining.
At being.
Which
at
I don't think
them.
You should be successful at abstaining. Yeah. I think it should never be suggested because people should have sex and they should follow their natural desires and enjoy each other.
Right.
Within their relationship boundaries.
Right. Within their relationship boundaries.
Yeah, whatever exactly. your relationship boundaries are. But so,
like,
yeah.
50-yard line. There you go. That's my boundary. Right there.
Yeah, well, and what's funny is I've seen that in religious cultures where they have abstained till marriage. They essentially, before that period, found ways to shut down any natural desire they had because it's bad. It's shameful. Mm-hmm. And so then suddenly they're married and it's supposed to be okay and they don't know how to turn it back on.
So you don't think people should even have abstinence before the marriage what a lot of people do, they say, oh, I want to wait till marriage.
I really think I would like it if it wasn't a shameful topic and people could just have sex normally.
Yeah. So what do you think about, like, I've heard of couples who are, that's their morals is that they don't mm-hmm. think that they should have sex before marriage. And that's, they're right.
Yeah, they everybody make has a right choice. To their values.
But I've heard some of them say that they still do lots of heavy petting and even mm-hmm. oral sex as a way of getting that pleasure and release and having that intimacy. And I think that sounds like a good way of doing it. If you are waiting for marriage, just put it in a different hole.
I think it's okay. I mean, you don't have to put it in a hole, but there can be a lot of heavy petting.
Right,
there can be dry humping, because then you're still at least acting out on your sexual urges.
You're still being intimate and mm-hmm. loving each other in some way.
Which, by the way, flexibility in that way is a good thing. You know,
flexibility
being able
is always good. You got to be able to put your your ankles behind your ears, right, Angela?
That's not what I mean by flexibility, but I do think couples need to be flexible in how they act out sexually.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be dry humping and touching each other and oral
right.
sex. It doesn't always
right.
have to be penetrative sex.
Because even like if you have a baby mm-hmm. or you have a major surgery and you're not able to have sex because it could injure you or cause you to have some terrible infection or whatever.
Exactly.
There are other things you can do, you know? There are other ways to stimulate. What are some other ways people can stimulate? Like, let's say you're not after sex. Your vagina has been torn and all that stuff, and you've had surgery or whatever. Mm-hmm. What are some ways you can give pleasure to your partner? Let's talk about the female.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, making out, I always go back to the...
So, how about a kiss?
How about a
Start
kiss?
Start with a kiss.
Start with a kiss,
That's
right?
a way to be intimate, yeah. Deep kissing.
Like deep kissing and long kissing. You know, it was fun when we were 13. It can still be fun at 30.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Make out sessions.
Make out sessions, massage sessions, combinations of the two, oral sex, using toys. Mm-hmm. Some people, like... practice with like dry humping, you know, like mm-hmm. dry humping's fun. You're just kind of basically rubbing bodies like you're having sex, only no penis enters a vagina.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many, you know, like you can do tantra. Some people practice like different
tantra
is just tantra are just different techniques for like matching breath and matching like rocking of the body. And, mm-hmm. and really it's kind of like a combination of yoga and sex. So there's mm-hmm. usually poses involved that are just meant to get you comfortable with each other.
Oh, we'll have to learn more about that. I do like a good yoga.
Yeah. A lot of people see it as kind of like the combination of yoga and sex. And I think it's fun, you know?
So do you have a book on that?
Yeah, I do have
we'll
a book
have
on
to
that,
read
honey.
That
we'll have to
later.
Read the tantra book.
And then we'll have an episode about it.
Yeah, that'd probably be a good idea.
Yeah, that'll work out. Yeah.
Well, and so going back to that like abstinence thing that I've been seeing. So like I actually know couples where they started off having sex, but because mm-hmm. their religion kind of shamed them and said, you're not supposed to have sex before marriage, then they stop
and
they
say,
let's cut this before marriage.
That's a terrible idea.
It was terrible. It's devastating for them. It ends up, like, because again, it's teaching them to not act on their desires. Mm-hmm. And so they basically, then what happens is they maybe started with a really good sex
life. Hot sex life. Yeah.
And then it stopped and then they can't get it back.
Right. Why? Well, how can they? Is there a way around that?
There are ways. That's why they're in sex therapy, obviously.
Yeah. So how do you fix that?
Well, I have to teach them that desire is okay again, because a lot of it comes from shame. You know, when
you have to normalize it.
Anytime you associate sex with shame, it's a bad deal.
Shame bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not sex that's good. Shameful. Ah. Sex is good. There are shameful behaviors that people can act out sexually, like seeking out other partners without consent, spending lots and lots of money you weren't prepared to.
Balloon animals.
Balloon? What? How would balloon animals? What do you mean?
Just messing with you.
Doing illegal things. Illegal things are bad things.
Like shoplifting?
I was thinking like pedophilia or exhibitionism, where somebody was not consenting to that.
Right. Always have consent. And
like your flashers, right? Those are exhibitionists.
Yep.
But they're non-consenting exhibitionists. Right.
No, don't do those things. Bad.
Yeah, but that's the point. It's not sex. It's specific behaviors associated
with
sex.
So those are bad sexual behaviors. Those are specifically illegal for a reason, because you're exploiting someone else who doesn't, he's not giving consent, and sometimes as a child, like, don't do it.
Exploitation is very clearly something people should be ashamed of. If you exploit people, I hope you are ashamed of that. If not, we have some work to do.
Yeah, definitely a lot of work to do on
but
that.
But we can't associate some of those behaviors with sex on the whole, because there's plenty of ways to enjoy sex that aren't shameful, that aren't exploitive.
Yeah.
Like just plain old banging.
Well,
especially with somebody you love.
Oh, she likes me, I think.
Only if he's good.
That's funny. Well, anything else on the topic, or that seemed like a good place to end on it?
I think that's a good ending point.
Yeah. Well, this has been the About Sex podcast. I'm Josh. And
I'm Angela Skirti. You can find me at www.therapistinst.louis.com if you have any questions or if you want to seek out therapy.
And you can find our podcast at aboutsexpodcast.com. Thank you and have a good night.